WDAY and WDAY.com.
More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now.
Retro Bumper Friday, music from the ska era. Just walked by the Six News newsroom on television side. Saw a live feed of my beloved Chicago Blackhawks victory parade. Apparently it's today. Would love to be in my hometown, but not as much as I love being here. Christopher Gabriel Program. Always like talking to people in Chicago. That's what I get to do right now. Author John Riley Myers. The man has a passion for politics. And he has quite a book. It is quite a book. Prince of the Pharisees. And I'm not even quite sure how to describe this book other than searing satire. And I love searing satire. Let me not let this man wait too long. Good morning, John.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, too. I'm here instead of down at the Hawks rally.
Oh, John. What was it like? Before we get to your wonderful book, what was it like the other night in Chicago when the Hawks won?
It was fantastic. There was just cars honking in the streets. People were filling in the streets down by Wrigleyville and out by the United Center. It was a great day. 50 years, 49 years since the last Stanley Cup. We're very happy.
I'm born and raised there, John, and I grew up in Rogers Park. And when I moved back to Chicago, I lived five blocks from Wrigley. I remember back growing up and listening to the Hawks on the radio when they didn't broadcast their home games. They didn't do the first period live. And I just when they won, and when you just said that, the car horns honking, I mean, I got chills just thinking about what it would be, because I was there for the Bulls championships, so that had to be exciting.
And that's what they're doing. They're rallying right now at Michigan and Wacker, hundreds of thousands of people. So they're having a good time.
Well, that's a good thing. Well, you're talking about a good time. Your book is a good time. Let's just explain who you are. Back in 2003, and once again, the name we're talking to John Riley Myers, Prince of the Pharisees. It's a novel, as he tells us on the front cover. And what's interesting on the front cover is you've got the White House. And it's sort of a black and white, almost a lithograph-looking picture of the White House with a cross sort of stuck into the top of it. And that's...
At a tilt.
And that is really, I think, a good metaphor for, if we can use that term, for what the book is,
right.
The content of it. You met in 2003. Tell us about when you met then Illinois State, State Senator Barack Obama.
Right. I met Barack Obama at Equality Illinois, which is an Illinois gay rights group, and it was a fundraiser, and he was there with all the other politicians he had just announced for the U.S. Senate, and he was looking for votes and looking for donors, and I had the same reaction everybody else did when I met him, which is, this man is the real deal, and this man should be on a national ticket. And it never crossed my mind at that time that he would be running for president in 2008. And that's which was really surprising, because I got started on the book at the tail end of working on his campaign, because I was disappointed with the wedge politics of Karl Rove and how he was using the gay rights marriage amendments to motivate people to go to the polls, and what I saw as a sort of a love versus hate issue, because he was trying to get people to vote against gay marriage, even though it's widely known his father was a gay man, so he really is a hypocrite himself. And what I'm trying to do in this book is have some fun, but poke fun at the religious right, kind of turn tables on them in 2012 with a queen of family values who's trying to get her perfect candidate nominated, and things go wrong. So I had fun doing it, had fun working with Barack Obama at the same time.
Visiting with John Riley Myers, author John Riley Myers, Prince of the Pharisees. Yeah, you know, when I was reading this, it's so well written I was going in and out of wondering, am I reading a satire or am I reading an actual account? I had to keep reminding myself of what is going on here. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So as you proceeded down this path, I'm curious, because there's no way to really, whenever I have somebody, an author on that has a book structured like this, it's really hard to get into plot points, as opposed to getting structure and idea and kind of an overview, as you've been elegantly doing for us. Were there How many times did you go down a road writing this, John, and then say, "Oh, and you know what? We're gonna veer off on this off ramp here and go down this road and explore this a little bit because these characters are very colorful."
Well, thank you. Actually, this book in its original concept is about three times longer than the book
really?
That actually got published. The next book will be a prequel because I wrote such extensive backstories on the characters that it starts in 1928, the original book, with a lynching of a black man on a courthouse lawn in a small town in Georgia when the U.S. senator that is later running for president, his father at the age of nine, witnesses that lynching. So right now it starts in 1975 with the wedding night of the Queen of Family Values. And so, the original idea for the book is revealed in the final chapter, and that actually came to me in a dream in the final weeks leading up to the election of Barack Obama. And what's interesting about writing this book is I finished it in the spring of 2007, and what was frustrating is I couldn't get it out the door and published soon enough because a lot of what I wrote about has come to pass. I have a Vietnam POW character. I have a Down syndrome baby character who grows up and plays a significant role. I have a birther issue. I have a black minister controversy. And all of those were in the book, which I finished in the spring of 2007, and they all became part of the political zeitgeist in 2008. So it's been interesting, and I also really, the Tea Party movement is part of this book too, because in the vein of the religious right movement that is set up and spun forward from the election of the Democratic candidate, who I don't name because I don't know who it is when I wrote it, it builds and builds to 2012, and I think you're going to see that.
Yeah,
proceed.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I'm done.
The prologue of the book starts Christmas Eve, London, 1957, I was just going to go there. That it goes to July 20th, 2012? Is it
right?
Okay,
right.
And I have to tell you, my background before I got into radio, John, was classical theater, and I found the book, and I was looking around. I didn't see anybody else say this. Maybe it's because my background's different from a lot of people reviewing books, but I found your book in style to be very Shakespearean in terms of the characters, in terms of the structure, and in terms of the commentary with an S in parentheses that you're making such searing points, and many times you just kind of had to connect dots over the course of 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 pages before you really got to the payoff.
Right, right. It takes a reader. You can't. Hopefully a reader that will sit down and read it in two or three readings, because the characters are, I deal with them episode by episode by episode. Hopefully each one of them a short story unto itself with a little twist of humor or pathos at the end or irony to keep you going. But yeah, they do come together sort of like Tales of the City where the separate characters weave together toward the end. And so you do have to keep with it. It's something that requires you to pay attention.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, that's interesting you use those words because I use those words in this program all the time when somebody writes a comment to me and it's like, just pay attention, would you please? Hey, you were the chair of Mr. Obama's Senate campaign's, correct me if I'm wrong, Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Committee, correct?
Yes.
All right, in your opinion right now, why do people say that? Of course it's in your opinion. What do politicians on the whole, we've talked about the lesbian gay community on this program. We've had some very, very heated discussions. What do politicians on the whole in 2010 fear about the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community? Because you do see that a lot.
Right. I think what they might fear the most is that they, in terms of the Democratic Party, is that they stay home. Because if they don't feel, like their candidate is speaking on behalf of them, large numbers may simply not be motivated to vote.
Right.
You see that with every group, whether it's black or Latin or women, if they don't feel that their candidate is speaking to them, they may not be as enthused to get out. The huge turnout for Barack Obama was because he motivated voters in so many segments, youth voters too. So I think that's what they should fear. I mean, if the LGBT shows up, they're going to vote for Democratic candidates by and large because the Democratic Party speaks for them. The Republican Party, you can look at it now on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They're working very hard to make sure that doesn't come to pass.